We are doing the book of Daniel, and we're up to what the Christians call the third chapter, the 19th verse. We're summarizing the story, but you guys could follow along your Hebrew-English versions. What we've seen thus far is that the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar, a midget, one amato, this high, little man, but he was king over Babylon, master of the world. He really conquered the world. And he, when he conquered the land of Israel, so he asked for his officers to take children from the aristocracy, from the nobility, from the tribe of Judah, from the tribe of Yehuda, and to bring them to his palace that they should be raised and educated, and they will serve as his advisors. And among these children were four children, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And these four children were Sarisim. We discussed the machlokas, what Sarisim means. Plainly translated, eunuchs or servants in the castle of Nebuchadnezzar. They stood as his advisors. And we had seen how Daniel was able to tell him what dream he dreamt and the interpretation. And so Daniel was given special status, and he asked for Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah to help him out in his job. And then Nebuchadnezzar, after having that first dream, in which he was told about how he would be king, but then ultimately the throne would pass on to the Persian and Mede Empire, and then to the Romans and Greeks, and then ultimately to the Greeks and the Macedons and the Romans, and Mashiach's going to come. So he said, how do I bring down the Jews? So he erected this massive idol in a valley where there were bones of Jews that had been killed for going against the kingdom. And he gathered all his people and said, now you all bow to this idol. Nebuchadnezzar was king for a long time, 45 years, the Talmud tells us. So everyone bows except for Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And people tell the king that these top advisors, they didn't bow to his idol. So he brings them before him, and he tells them, well, will you bow? I've heard you didn't bow. And you know what? I'm going to give you another chance. If you bow, then everything will be okay. And if not, then I'm going to throw you into that burning furnace, just like I said. And who's the God that will save you from my hands? And then Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they answered the king. They don't even call him his majesty. They say to him, in this matter, you're Nebuchadnezzar. Listen here, Nebuchadnezzar. They call him by his first name. About this, we don't really have to give you an answer. You're not our master when it comes to this point. There is a God who we serve. He could save us from the furnace or anything else. He could save us from your hand. And if he doesn't, you should still know that we will not serve your idol. Either God will save us or he won't. Now, what was Nebuchadnezzar's plan? He figured if he gets all of the Jewish people to sin, then God will leave them. God will be upset at them. And once the Jewish people sin, he could bring them down. That's the plan that Bilam had as well. When Bilam saw that he couldn't curse the Jewish people, he saw they still had a future. So he told Balak, you want to overcome them? The way to do it is to cause them to sin. He was right. 24,000 people died because of their sins. Then and there, when the Jewish people sinned. So now Nebuchadnezzar figures, what's the way to ensure that I am king? By causing them to sin. Now I have a question for you. I want you to think about this. I didn't see anyone that discussed it directly. It's a question that's been bothering me a few years, and I think maybe I thought of a correct answer. But I want you guys to think about the question. At least it should bother you a little bit. Nebuchadnezzar was told in the dream that after his kingdom, there would be a second kingdom, and then a third kingdom, and then a fourth kingdom, and then ultimately the Mashiach. So you'd think Nebuchadnezzar would try to clean the slate of the second kingdom. What's he worried about the Mashiach that's at the end, after all four kingdoms? There's still a way to go. Why is his first focus, well, let me bump off the Jews? They're the problem here. At first glance, the problem is not the Jews. The Mashiach is a ways off. There are still three more kingdoms that are supposed to come before the Mashiach. So why was Nebuchadnezzar's next focus to bump off the Jews? I didn't see anyone that discussed it directly. So let's leave it as a question. Yeah?
Is there something about this kings being short? Because I also heard something about Pharaoh being...
Right. So let's see. Well, today we'll get to that discussion. We'll see that within Daniel it says that.
And also, maybe it was... maybe if he knocks out the purpose of creation, then all those other kingdoms might not come.
So that's one of the things I thought too. That maybe we saw today in the Tivot Shalom that the world is headed towards Mashiach. It's like a goal. So then what we would say is that maybe these four kingdoms, including Nebuchadnezzar's, are just stepping stones to get there. They're like the ladder that Yaakov sees. You just got to climb. You got to pass them. It's like they say in the name of... I don't remember which Hasid. In the name of Rav Nachman. They say that in dating, you have to pass certain experiences. You have to date certain girls before you can meet your wife. You have to... Each one is a step closer. So... You grow from each experience and then you get to your wife. So that's what they say in his name. So maybe these kingdoms were also something that something had to happen here in order to get there. Now, if you take away the Mashiach, so then what happens? What's his mathematical equation? I remove the Mashiach, then the world is left to run its course, and then all I have to do is maintain my power. To an extent, we could understand that that's what's going to happen in the beginning of the book of Esther. Why is Ahasuerus celebrating? Because he figures the Jews no longer have a future. They haven't been redeemed. If they don't have a future, then I do have a future. If they have a future, I don't have a future. Meaning we said that we're learning the book of Daniel as an introduction to the book of Esther. So one point we just discussed. That's one point that we could bear in mind. There's another point. The Talmud in Megillah, the Gemara asks, why in fact did God let Ahasuerus do such a decree? Why did Ahasuerus get away with such a decree? Why was it that we came so close to being annihilated? So the Talmud offers different understandings. And one understanding that the Gemara says is because the Jewish people bowed down here. Because the Jewish people bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's idol, God decreed in heaven that Haman would succeed with his decree. So it seems Nebuchadnezzar came pretty close to succeeding. He did cause us to sin, and God was upset at us for bowing. The Gemara says, but the decree didn't last. So the Gemara says, Nebuchadnezzar were... When he made this decree and the Jews bowed to the idol, they didn't believe that idol had any powers. They made believe that they believed in the idol. They were fakers. So when God made the decree, God, so to speak, was a faker. God made believe that the Jews would be annihilated. It wasn't for real. The cure was already in place even before the decree. Okay. So now Nebuchadnezzar got very upset at Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and his countenance changed, his face filled with anger, and he said, heat up that oven seven times the heat that it's usually heated. And he called great soldiers, brave soldiers. He said, you bind Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah and throw them into that furnace. So they bound them up together with their royal clothing and they took them up the ladder. They took them to a place on top where they could throw them in, and they threw them into the fire, and they were rushing up to that hole, and because they were rushing, so they didn't notice the sparks flying all over, and the fire killed. A flame shot up and killed the great soldiers who were coming to throw Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah into the fire. So the soldiers are dead. And Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were just thrown into this furnace. And that's where we left off last week. So they fall into the furnace and they were bound. And Nebuchadnezzar is standing by the gates, looking on. And let's go back in history. Nebuchadnezzar was a general. He was a soldier in the army of Sanherib. If you recall, prior to the destruction of the temple, the Assyrian Empire was at large. And the Assyrian Empire was being led by the Assyrian king, Sanherib. And Sanherib came and conquered the 10 tribes. And he came to the gates of Jerusalem. And then he got word that he was being attacked from Egypt. And he has to go fight a war in Egypt. So he sent word to Chizkiyahu. He said, I'll be back. Don't think... This was Sanherib. He said to Chizkiyahu, don't think your God saved you. I will be back. And he went back to fight Egypt. He got all the wealth of Egypt and the nations there. The wealth of Cush. And then with all that wealth and all the slaves, he came to the gates of Jerusalem, he came back. And he had thousands, according to our tradition, he had millions of soldiers standing surrounding Jerusalem. Among those soldiers was one named Nebuchadnezzar. And God told Chizkiyahu, tonight there's going to be a miracle. And that night, God sent out an angel through the camps of Sanherib, and the angel killed all of Sanherib's, all of the soldiers. Not everyone died. Some walked away ill, some walked away living. But the army was demolished. The army was destroyed, Sanherib's army, and that was a great miracle that happened at the gates of Jerusalem. If only we'd know the place where the army was camped. Every time we come there, we'd have to make a special blessing. We no longer have a tradition exactly where they were encamped. But technically, when you come to a place where there was a great miracle for all of the Jewish people, so then you make a blessing. We just don't have a tradition exactly where they were camped at the time. Why do we know today? There were. It seems like in the time of Chazal, they did know. In the time of the Mishnah, it seems they did know. Well, the Kotel, no, you have to know the exact place. We don't know the exact place. Just because you know you're around there, somewhere around there, that's not enough. You have to know exactly where the miracle took place. According to one Medrash, what God did was God enabled them to hear the angels singing that night. And when humans hear angels singing, they drop dead. That's one understanding. They woke up the next morning, they were all fluttering, having some kind of heart attack and dropping dead like flies. At any rate, that was the end of the war, and then all the wealth of Cush and all the wealth of Mitzrayim was taken into Jerusalem. Jerusalem became a very wealthy city. Now Nebuchadnezzar is standing by the gates. He had been a soldier then. He had seen the angel come into the camp and kill soldier after soldier. And now Nebuchadnezzar got up all scared, and he yelled, he said to his advisors, "We threw 3 into the fire and they were bound." They said, "That's true, our king." And he said, but I see 4. And nothing seems to be happening to them. And the 4th one looks like the angel I saw back when I was at the gates of Jerusalem. Looks just like the angel. So Nebuchadnezzar walked next to the doors of the burning furnace. And he called out to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And he said, "You true servants of the God who's above, you come out." And Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah came out of the furnace. Everyone gathered around them, all the different advisors. They tried to smell them. Did their clothing smell of smoke? Did their hair get burnt? You know, hair lights like that. If you have a long beard, be careful when you light Hanukkah candles and stuff. Hair takes fire very quickly. They didn't smell of smoke. Their hair wasn't burned. Their clothing didn't change. And Nebuchadnezzar said, "Blessed is the God of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah who sent his angel. He saved them." And they went against the word of the king. They were willing to give up their lives, to give up their bodies, not to serve any god but their God. And I hereby decree that anyone who speaks badly about the God of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah will be sliced into pieces and their home will be turned into a dump, because there's no other God who could save like their God just did. And Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were placed in charge of the city of Babylon. And that's the end of this story at this point. Why did they... Where was Daniel? So the simple understanding is Daniel wasn't expected to be there. After what he had done, so after his great miracle, so he wasn't expected to be there and bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's idol. Why did Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah wait inside the furnace until the king told them to come out? So Rashi quotes one understanding. Rashi says that even though they had a miracle, they didn't become so haughty as to disgrace the kingship. The king didn't tell them to come out, so they're not going to walk out of the furnace alive as though laughing in his face. God made a miracle for them. That doesn't mean they could laugh at the king in his face. So they waited till he told them to come out. But there's another understanding that's quoted here. Until that point, Nebuchadnezzar was angry at them. Nebuchadnezzar had them thrown into a furnace, and God made a miracle that the furnace didn't harm them. There are different things that could harm a person in this world. There are inanimate objects. There's domim, there's chai, there's tzomech, and then there is Adam. Adam, the human being, was given bchira chofshit, free will. And sometimes our free will comes into conflict with someone else's free will. God created the world in a way that we have the potential to do evil things. That means that part of our bchira chofshit, part of our free will, is that we can do something bad to someone else. Now, here there are different opinions among the commentaries. If someone kills someone, Reuven killed Shimon, right? So what do we say? Do we say that Reuven had bchira chofshit, so Reuven could stop Shimon's life? Or do we say, well, God wouldn't have let Reuven kill Shimon if Shimon didn't deserve to die? If you say that God wouldn't have let Reuven kill Shimon if Shimon didn't deserve to die, so then Reuven could make the claim, well, what do you want from me? I pulled the trigger. Either he was supposed to die or not. It has nothing to do with me. God's running the world. So obviously, we don't say that. Obviously, we're held accountable for our actions. Meaning, what we might say is that, Reuven, you did an action which was murder. The fact that God let it take place is God's calculation. Why Shimon deserved to die. So that's one understanding, which obviously needs more work. Our class isn't in Hashkafa now, but we'll just begin the thought. There's another understanding that says that God did give potential for human beings to harm one another. That's part of the bchira chofshit we have in this world. Meaning, a person might be granted from heaven 120 years, but if he enters the war zone, or he enters a place that bombs are falling, well, someone else might kill him. Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to live till 120. When Paro decided to kill him, so Moshe's life was in danger. Yaakov Avinu was supposed to live a certain number of years. He took care of his life. He lived those years. David HaMelech, we see that when King Saul, when Shaul wanted to kill him, he didn't say, well, you know what, in heaven they decided how many years I have left. Either I'm going to die or not, so let me just stick around and see. No, David HaMelech said, I'm going to make a run for it. And that's what the prophet teaches us. Chavi kimat rega ad yavol zam. Wait. Wait till the period of anger passes. Lecha mi bo v'chadarecha. Go, my nation, hide in your rooms. Be careful, it's a time of danger. So that understanding says over here that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah saw that God wanted them to live. So against the nature of fire, God intervened. God said, I won't let the fire burn them. But what would happen if Nebuchadnezzar would charge them with a sword? Then Nebuchadnezzar is directly trying to kill them. Well, to direct act, because Nebuchadnezzar is given bechira chofshit, free will, then God might not intervene. When it's a question of them three and the fire, so then it's them and the fire, and there God did intervene. But that doesn't guarantee them that if Nebuchadnezzar would directly try to kill them, God would intervene, because that would be contradiction to Bechira Chofshit. So some say that's why they didn't walk out of the furnace. They waited till they heard him talking calmly to them and saying, please, come out of the furnace. When he told them that, then they walked out of the furnace. Now, the book of Daniel tells us a story, but the story is told in the form of a letter. A letter that Nebuchadnezzar writes after the story, obviously. After the fact, Nebuchadnezzar decides he wants to write a story. He writes a letter to his people, and he's really a king over the world. So he sends a letter to all the nations, and he says, I want to tell you the miracles that God did with me. How great are God's miracles. How awesome, how powerful. His kingship, his throne is the eternal throne, and he rules from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, I was calmly in my home. Everything was pleasant and calm. And I had a dream. Now, I was very scared because of my dream. My thoughts were perturbing me, and that's why I had this dream. So I called in the wise men of Babylon, and I asked them to explain my dream. And the wise men could not interpret my dream until ultimately the last one that came was Daniel. And Daniel, he is named after my god, Belshazzar. The Babylonian idol was called Baal. So Belshazzar means the wisdom that he has is from my idol, Baal. And he has the spirit of the holy gods in him. I told him the dream. And obviously, Daniel is going to tell him the explanation. The dream was he saw a great tree, and that tree reached the heavens. It spanned all of earth, and it had great branches. All living creatures found food in that tree. Under its shade, all wild animals could stay. And in its branches, all the different birds could live. Now, all living creatures were sustained from this tree. And then I saw, as I was sleeping, an angel came down from heaven. And he called out and said, cut down this tree, cut down its branches, scatter its fruit. The animals will have to scatter from under it. The birds will fly from its wings. But the roots of the tree, leave in the ground, bind them in metal and copper, leave them in the grass of the fields, and they'll get wet with the rain of heavens. They will be with the wild animals in the grass of the fields. Remove his heart from the hearts of humans, give him a heart of animals, and 7 years should pass on him like that. This is the decree of the angels above, so that all living creatures will know that the potent one, God above, has rulership over the kingdom of mankind, and he chooses who to make king. Ushfal anashim yekim Allah. The conclusion of the dream, and the lowest of men, God can appoint over all of humanity. And from here our sages derived, ushfal anashim, the lowest of men, that sometimes God does appoint the lowest of men. And that's a reference to Nebuchadnezzar. That's a reference to Paro. They were both midgets. They were the smallest of men. They were each an amah high. They were each 2 footers, literally 2 feet tall. And yet they ruled the globe. So that's the dream I dreamed, Nebuchadnezzar tells Daniel. And you, Belshazzar, you, Daniel, tell me the explanation, because all the wise men of my kingdom couldn't give me, and I know you could, because you have the Holy Spirit within you. Daniel thought, he was silent, and the pasuk says, Ishtomam kesha'a chada. He was silent for a period, for an hour. This quote is quoted in the Gemara. Sometimes the rabbis are asked a question and they have to stop and think. So the Gemara says, Ishtomam kesha'a chada. They paused for a period, they thought. And Daniel figured out the explanation of the dream, and the king could see that he was scared. So the king said to him, don't worry. It's the dream isn't your dream, it's my dream. Don't be scared of it. So Daniel says, "My master, let the dream come true to your enemies, let the explanation be true to those that hate you." Our sages say that when Daniel said this, he raised his eyes to heaven and said, "My master, God above, let this dream come true to your enemies, to this man that's standing opposite me, to Nebuchadnezzar, who is your enemy, and the explanation to those who hate you, that's this Nebuchadnezzar." The tree that you saw that was so great that reached the heavens and was visible throughout the land, it had such great branches and so many fruits, everything was sustained from that tree, everyone lived under that tree, and the birds lived in that branches. That's a reference to you, the king. You've been so great, your kingship has expanded throughout the land, your greatness reaches the heavens. And that you saw an angel come down from heaven and declare, cut down the tree, destroy it, but leave the roots in the ground and bind them in metal and copper, leave it in the grass of the fields, and it will be with the wild animals of the field for 7 periods. The explanation is, it's been decreed from above on you, my master, the king, that you will be pushed off from humanity. You're going to go insane. You're going to run around with the wild animals. You're going to eat grass like oxen, and you'll run around naked in the rain for 7 years until you recognize that there's a potent one above ruling over everything that's down below. And he gives the kingship to whoever he chooses. And here there's a discussion, because Nebuchadnezzar knew what was going on, because he had to come to this recognition. And he was pretty stubborn. For 7 years he refused to declare, "God, I know you run the world." Meaning he had his first dream, and he said, "Wow, Daniel, that's amazing. You could figure out the dream I dreamed. You could figure out the explanation, so I'll cause the Jewish people to sin." He made the big idol, and everyone bowed except for Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And then he says, "Wow, your God is amazing. Your God saved you. There is no God in the world that could save like your God saved." But he never said he's my God. Nebuchadnezzar is always maintaining his distance. He's still, when he invites Daniel, what does he say? "Daniel, who's named after my God. He has the wisdom of the gods, and his name is just like my God, Belshazzar. You come advise me, Daniel." So, in spite of all these miracles, Nebuchadnezzar is holding his ground. He's not adopting monotheism. He's not adopting a belief in Hashem. So Daniel tells him, "Now you are going to be an animal, and you're going to run around with the animals, and you'll be that way for 7 years, 7 periods of time, till you give a declaration that God is running the world." So obviously he had the intellect to give that declaration. Here there's a discussion among the sages. Was it 7 years? Was it not 7 years? Did he literally become an animal, or was he just running around naked? The pasuk describes, we'll see in a minute, what happened, and then we'll, I don't know if we'll get to that today, we'll discuss what the commentaries say about it. So, that, continues Daniel, that which they declared leave the roots in the ground, that's because the throne will remain. So that you know that God is controlling the world. You will come back to your throne. But, my king, let me give you good advice. Redeem your sins with charity. If you have compassion over the poor, then you will be able to redeem that which you have done wrong. And then you will extend the tranquility, the peacefulness of your stay. Nebuchadnezzar says, it all happened. I listened to Daniel's advice, and I opened up my storage houses, and I gave charity. And after 12 months, I was walking on the rooftop of my throne, of my castle, and I heard all the noise. I asked, "What's all that noise?" They told me, "It's the poor. It's the poor that you feed every day." And I said, "But I am the king. This is Babylon, the great state that I built into this great kingdom. with my glory, I'm going to feed this poor. As I said that, a heavenly voice came out and said, to you, Nebuchadnezzar, we declare, you've just lost your kingdom. And you're going to be pushed out of humanity. You're going to run around with the wild animals. You'll eat grass like ox for 7 periods until you recognize that the one above is ruling the kingdom of mankind. And he chooses who to give the kingdom to. And at that hour, it all came true about Nebuchadnezzar. He started running around, ran into the forest, eating grass like an ox. And he ran around naked. The rains came directly on his flesh until his hair got thick like eagle's wings and his nails got thick like a bird's nails. So Nebuchadnezzar is running around. The animals see an interesting animal and they're attracted to it. Our sages say that the animals lived with him like another animal. And this was a punishment because Nebuchadnezzar lived with the different kings that he conquered, including Chizkiyahu. It was a sign that he took control of them. And at the end of this period, Nebuchadnezzar raised his eyes to heaven and he was given back his intellect and he blessed. He gave thanks to God and he said, I recognize you run the world. Your kingdom is for generations. And all of humanity, everything that lives all over the planet, all of humanity, all of earth, they're like the little dust particles you see when the sun is shining through the window. So you look at the rays of the sun, sometimes you're in a room, you look at the rays, you see little dust particles in the air, says Nebuchadnezzar, all of humanity is like a dust particle. And God chooses, He does what He wants, He chooses what to do with the armies of heaven, and He chooses what to do with the people down below. And no one could protest before God and tell Him what to do. And when Nebuchadnezzar recognizes that, he gets back his intellect, he gets back his throne, he gets back his looks, comes back to humanity. And not only does he come back to humanity, he comes back even stronger than he was initially. Our sages say he was able to jump on a lion and ride on a lion and take on a crocodile and tie it with its head. He was given even greater strength when he came back to his throne. Yeah, we'll discuss that Bezrat Hashem. Probably in the next class. His son took over the throne when he was gone, and when he came back, he punished his son and put him in jail. He said, what kind of chutzpah are you taking the throne? I'm not yet dead. He threw his son in jail. And so when he did die, his son said, I'm not willing to take the throne till I see he's dead. So he took his body out of the grave to make sure he's dead before he was willing to sit on the throne after Nebuchadnezzar did die. So Nebuchadnezzar writes this whole story in a letter, and he concludes the letter, and now I, Nebuchadnezzar, I praise, exalt, glorify the King of the heavens, that everything he does is true, his actions are just, and whoever walks in pride, God could bring down to size. That's how Nebuchadnezzar ends this letter, and Nebuchadnezzar sent this letter to all of the nations, a recognition that he, Nebuchadnezzar, recognizes that God is running the show.